Hello, hello, and welcome out there in podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast where two old friends get together and talk about horror and science fiction, films, television, sometimes novels, references that have made these movies interesting, and the key elements that have been taken from them. My name is David. I'm here with my good friend Tim. How are you, Tim?
I'm good. It sounded like you didn't remember your name there.
I was briefly taken away. But we want to thank you guys for listening to us. If you are new to the podcast and or YouTube channel and are just finding us, thanks so much. And we hope you enjoy it and we'll tell your friends and come back and listen or watch us next time. And if you are a returning guest, thank you, thank you, thank you. Obviously, we're doing something that at least remotely interests you. Tim, what have you been up to? What have you been doing?
Oh my goodness. Well, I have been on a satanic kick. I get on those every once in a while. And
don't we all?
Watched a couple of films this week that I would like to mention. One is The Dark and the Wicked.
Ooh.
And the other is The Devil's Candy.
Mm.
I know we had talked about Dark and the Wicked.
Yes.
A friend of yours is in it.
Correct. Correct.
His name is Michael Abbott.
Uh-huh.
He was also in the season premiere episode of last season's
Walking Dead.
Fear the Walking Dead.
Yep.
And by far, probably the best episode of the season so far. He's great in this. Everybody's really good in this, especially the girl that plays his sister. However, I like The Devil's Candy better.
Really? Okay.
I did. Both movies, ironically enough, were filmed in Texas. Did you know that?
I did not.
That Dark and the Wicked's filmed in Texas by a Texas filmmaker. I can't remember his name. Brian Bertino is his name. And he is known for this, as well as that movie with Liv Tyler. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
With the kids. Where is it? The one where the kids are like, it's like a home invasion thing.
The Others?
Is it called The Other? No. That's a ghost story. Excuse me. It's called The Strangers.
Strangers. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one where they wear the hoods.
Right. They look like little burlap.
Yeah. Burlap bag
things.
Killers.
Yeah. That movie I have not seen in a very long time, but I do remember it being scary.
Yeah, it was good.
And The Dark and the Wicked, the best thing, I don't know how to explain it. The atmosphere of The Dark and the Wicked is off the charts scary. It is really, really intense and scary. My problem with it is that there's not a lot of explanation for why things are happening.
Okay. So it's more of a mood piece?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's like The Witch, but to me The Witch had more exposition or background for what's going on.
Well, not really.
I mean,
even by the end of The Witch, you're still going, really? Did that happen, you think? You know?
But there's a witch in the forest. She does something to the little boy, and you know all of these things are transpiring because of that.
Okay.
And she kidnaps the baby, too.
Yep, give you that one.
In this, you know, animals are dying. The mother's not happy that the children are there visiting, but she won't say why. She has a diary, but it doesn't really reveal that much.
Hmm.
So, but
okay.
Anyway, The Devil's Candy also has a good cast, maybe even a better cast. Have you ever heard of Ethan Embry?
I've never heard of this movie. Devil, is it new? Is it this like past few years or?
It came out 4 years earlier. It came out in 2016.
Okay.
It's by a guy named Sean Byrne, who is originally from Tasmania, but I think he's in Canada now.
Okay.
He directed a movie before this, I think in 2012, called The Loved Ones, that is highly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like a 98%, so it's next on my list. It's got a picture of a prom queen with a drill on it. I know. That movie was invited to 20 film festivals, including Sundance.
Okay.
And got him on the map. And then he did The Devil's Candy, which stars, well, first of all, it's got a great cast, including Ethan Embry, who most people would recognize as the recovering son on Grace and Frankie, if you've ever watched that show.
Okay, yep.
He's great. He wears a horrible wig in this movie because he is an artist and he's like a headbanger, so he's got to have long hair. Mm. But other than his bad wig, everything else about this movie, including the music, which is all heavy metal, is great.
Okay.
His daughter, I cannot remember her name. Anyway, you wouldn't recognize some of these other cast members except for the guy that plays the killer, and his name is Pruitt Taylor Vince.
Okay.
Do you recognize that name?
I do not.
Shit. I'm trying to think of what he's been in that you would remember him from. I don't know. He's done a million things. He's kind of an overweight, pudgy-looking guy.
Okay.
But I'm not giving him a lot of good notes, am I? But you would recognize him. He's fabulous. This movie is, I don't know, it's off the charts intense. I mean, Dark and the Wicked is atmospheric. This movie is intense. And I highly recommend both of them.
Okay, well, let's see. Dark and the Wicked basically is two siblings who are called home because their dad's dying or something like that, from what I gather. And that's the premise. Then weird things are happening.
They go home. They're not called home.
Oh, okay. But weird things are happening at the homestead, sort of thing. What is the premise of Devil's Candy?
The Devil's Candy is an artist and his wife and child. And what's really cool is they're a family, and they are a loving family, even though he's an artist and they're all into heavy metal. I mean, that's what's really cool about it. It's kind of an alternative family. Move into a house, and the realtor discloses that, you know, there was deaths in the house. You know, realtors have to disclose that kind of information.
Really? What?
And so they get a deal on the house. But what they don't realize is that the member of the family, and there is a little bit of weirdness here. I won't get into it because you haven't seen the film. But the member of the family that was responsible for those deaths has been in an insane asylum, and I guess he's either escaped or he's out now. And he keeps coming back to the house and freaking them out. And he is a heavy metal he's not a heavy metal person per se, but he likes really loud guitar because you find out later it drowns out the voices telling him to do things.
Mm.
And the girl loves guitars too. He ends up leaving her a Flying V, and she wants to keep it, and her dad's like, you can't keep it, this guy's crazy or whatever. And then something happens where the father ends up relenting and letting her keep the guitar. And that guitar becomes very important later on in the story.
Okay, then.
Yeah. But I don't know how to explain it. I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy with it, is because it's an original story. I've not seen a story like this before.
Hmm. Well, okay, then.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. I haven't seen either
of
those.
I may have it on the list for next year. I think I may have already added it.
You've already added it since you've seen it.
Yeah. It's a runner-up for sure.
Devil's Candy now has to go on to my list of
and he's a director I want to watch out
of
for.
Heavy metal horror movies.
Especially after I see The Loved Ones. I'll let you know maybe next week.
Okay.
Because I may watch that one soon.
Interesting.
Have you been up to?
I have not been doing anything that satanic or fun at all. But I did do a little bit of literary. I've been really curious because I started seeing more articles about this series that's coming out based on The Wheel of Time, which is a series I've mentioned a few times of books that I started reading years and years ago and have still not finished. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but in places...
I'm familiar with the title.
In places, I think it's actually better than Lord of the Rings, than Tolkien. It's definitely inspired by it. It's a mythic fantasy story, combines a lot of Asian mythology, Christian mythology, into this typical hero's journey story. Lots of really well-constructed magic and races in it. It's written by...
Can you break it down as far as, like, author and time and number of books?
It's written by Robert Jordan. He started it, I think it was first published in, I think, 90, maybe?
Fairly recent.
I know he wrote it, and it took years and years for it to finally get published. And once it was published, it just took off. It's now 14 novels.
Wow, that's a lot.
He did not get to finish it. He left, he actually passed away after the 12th novel, but left these extensive notes of the last book and how it should end. And another guy named, I think his name was Brandon Sanderson, who was a huge fan of the series of books and had actually helped him in the last, like, two books. He had been like his assistant in two books. He ended up taking over and taking all the notes with the blessing of Jordan's estate and all that. And looking over the notes, he said, "This is very extensive notes for the last book. So the last book will now be three books." So he finished the entire run of the novel with three books at the end. And it's been picked up now. It's been tried a few times. There was this huge deal, which you might like, about the estate. Essentially, before Robert Jordan died, he had given permission to this company to do a television series based on the books. Great. Because it's 14 books. You can't do it as a movie. Sorry, not going to happen. So you definitely need it as a series. Well, they just kept delaying and delaying and delaying and not doing it and not doing it. Other companies and other people and everybody else was, you know, contacting the estate saying, "We want to do this. These novels are great. We want to do it." And they go, "Sorry, another company owns the rights." Right? Finally came up to, and I'm paraphrasing this a little bit from what I remember, but it came up to the fact that their contract on the rights would expire, you know, at the end of the month. So they literally spent like 3 days and threw together a 90-minute movie and sent it direct to online because they had to produce the first pilot in order to keep the rights for another 2 years. And so this terrible, clunky, horrible 90-minute thing came out, which allowed them to keep the rights for two more years.
Wear buckets on their heads.
Yeah, right. You know, bad faux leather costumes with a sword, you know, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, but it finally lapsed, and now it's been picked up, and supposedly the director attached to it is great, the casting is great, everything's going good, it's been filmed, hasn't been released yet, and I haven't seen it yet, but they say it's looking great for...
And who's doing it?
Good question. I can't remember right now. because
but it's going to be a series on a streaming platform?
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I looked back at... So the reason I mentioned is because I looked back at the first novel again. And there's a classic story for me with that is that I tried to start this novel three different times. And, Sony Pictures and Amazon is doing it for Amazon Prime. That's where it's going.
Okay.
But I tried this novel three different times because a few of my friends loved it and were like on book 7 and book 8, you know, at the time. And they were going, you got to start this. It's just so good. And I was going, eh, I tried. Don't really like it. Blah, blah, blah. Finally, one friend said, get to page 64. If you can get to page 64, I think you'll like it. And I went, eh, okay. So the next time I started it, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, it started picking up and I was going, oh my God, I can't believe this. It was just like this huge thing really happened. And it just opened up the whole story. And I went, oh my God. Da, da, da. And when I finished that chapter, I went back and sure to God, page 64 was where that event took place. And I went,
oh wow.
Okay. So, and since then I was hooked. I read everything up to the 10th book, but I haven't finished the series. So I still don't know how it ends. But it's, from a novelist standpoint, you might like it, although as a series, books 8, 9, and 10, oh my God, are they slow. Really slow.
Yeah.
And I thought, ooh, you could have probably smooshed those into one book, and it would have been great. But what's brilliant about it, you know, everybody talks about Tolkien and the way, what he did with the elves and what he did with dwarves and, you know, creating this entire culture out of them, even down to their languages and everything else. This novel is the same with all of these other cultures in this world.
Is it more fantasy-esque and less sci-fi?
Yes, much more fantasy. Yes.
Okay.
It is even down to, you know, like Tolkien, it has an entire map created. I mean, to me, if it had the right producer, it would be as good as Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones was pretty brilliant until the last year. Hmm. So it would be better than that. And a little bit more fantastical elements than that. You know, they have dragons.
And it's called The Wheel of Time.
The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan. Yeah.
I've heard of Robert Jordan. He's written other stuff that was big, didn't he?
I think he did do a couple. I've never read anything else by him. From what I remember vaguely, he came from like the Citadel. He came from like a military background and was like big into military history and all of that, and then suddenly started writing novels. And of course, all of the battles and wars and strategy in these novels is pretty intense.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I could be thinking of Robert Howard. Wasn't there a Robert E. Howard, too?
Robert E. Howard, yeah, was a big
novelist.
Wasn't
he like Conan or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Anyway, it sounds familiar, and I've heard Wheel of Time for sure, which means, well, you know, I used to work in bookstores, so I'm sure I saw it.
Oh, I'm sure you did, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible, horrible, yeah. Bad fantasy covers on every single book, but the books inside
are great. Oh, well, that is a great segue for the film we may be doing today.
Yes, let's may do that. Yes. What are we doing, Tim?
Well, what we are going to do is venture back to 1982 to a little gem from Frank Henenlotter entitled Basket Case. I don't know where to start with this movie. There's lots of this movie. I get a little overwhelmed with it, similar to the way I got overwhelmed with Dawn of the Dead, because I have a lot of memories associated with this movie, and
okay.
There's just a lot of things about this movie that I really like. It is a low-budget movie. It is a bad movie. It has terrible cast, for the most part, and it looks like it was filmed in a motel in New York.
Over a weekend.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's one of those movies that has just stayed with me for a very, very long time. I have seen this movie at least 20 times. And I would say that there's at least one other person that has seen it that many times, and that's Joe Bob Briggs, because he loves this movie too. What is your memory of this movie, seeing it for the first time?
I think you showed this movie to me. I think you had it on the VH and the S in probably a top loading VCR at that time, probably.
Yeah, it's that old.
I remember us watching it a couple of times, I think, over the years at different times. Both times prompted by you, and now a third time prompted by you. I remember watching it again, it just brought back a lot of the same memories, which is, you know, there's just, there are those movies, where, whatever genre it is, it could be a romantic comedy where the movie is just so bad it's bad and you just can't get through it. Then there are other ones that for some reason, even though they are bad, there's something compelling about them or something unique, you know?
Absolutely.
A few weeks ago, we did The Raven in both incarnations, and neither one of those was really a good movie. And I would think, no, it's not a good movie. And I wouldn't really recommend it. This one, I probably would. I would think, you know, actually, all of Hinnenlauter's. I think Frankenhooker, Brain Damage, and this one, all three, have something just unique and in his, I don't know, it's almost, I guess maybe it's that community theater in me that's going, rooting for him to make the movie, even though that's, I know it. He's, you know, he's spending his grocery money probably to do this scene.
Right. And it's a lot like what we've talked about with The Evil Dead and Mad Max, where the people that made this film believed in it.
Yes.
They didn't have the money or the talent, but they had the heart, and they put it into it. You can tell.
Right, but I think those other two that you mentioned did have the talent and the cast and everything. This one does not, really. But it does have, I think, the dedication of Hinnenlauter, because he wrote and directed, too, right?
Didn't he?
Yeah. And it is unique. It's different. It's something you don't see. It's that Donnie Darko sort of, that's one of the keys for me. It's that weirdness that you wouldn't have thought of and wouldn't think possible. And then when it happens, I mean, when you finally find the story out, you kind of go, okay. And then it just keeps getting kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Brain Damage or Frankenhooker in a long time, and I don't really remember them. Are they both very New York-centric movies, too?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Because this movie, New York, is a character in this movie, and it's the character of the New York that is gone. I mean, it's the seedy New York that just don't really see anymore.
No, it's 42nd Street before it was cleaned. Definitely. You know,
I mean,
it's strippers.
There's porno theaters on every corner,
yep,
and drug dealers, and trash. And, I mean, I don't know, I felt a little nostalgic for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there is that. I was even getting, like, you know, Taxi Driver, Mean Streets, Scorsese feel, you know, all the way through it. Especially those long tracking shots of him running on the streets or just walking, you know, like in the opening when he's, before he even finds the hotel, just that whole huge him walking down the street and all the stuff you see. I was going, this is real gritty. This
when
is
that
New
guy
York
walks
at that
up
time.
To him and is trying to sell him drugs, and he lists like every drug in the encyclopedia.
This guy is a pharmacy. That's one of the best lines in the movies.
Quaaludes,
he just keeps
I got
going.
Tri-stick, I got Reds, I got Bennies, I got. He just keeps going on and on and on.
I got windowpane blotter.
I got girls.
I got girls, hookers, you got blondes, brunettes. What's the matter with you, man? What's the matter
what
with
the
you?
What the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah. And then even down to, you know, this gaggle of bizarre tenants in this hotel that it's just a way, and you see them often because obviously
it's like an apartment building.
Yes, but obviously there's nothing else happening because anytime anybody screams, they all run to that door, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Before I go over my first experience with this movie, let me give a brief synopsis.
Yes.
We're talking about a movie with the character of Dwayne Bradley, who carries around a large basket. We don't find out until later that that big basket contains his extremely deformed twin, Belial, and they are in New York to seek vengeance on the doctors. They were Siamese twins. And they're seeking vengeance on the doctors that separated them against their will.
Yeah, they were, and it's a, it should be noted, it's a wicker basket with a padlock.
It's like a picnic basket.
Yeah, it's a picnic basket.
Yeah, actually, I have a picture of it here.
With a padlock on it. And
there we go.
Oh, that's even Belial. It would give away the monster. Look at that.
Yeah, that's Belial to my right.
And the... Yes, you're correct. They were separated forcefully by their father, correct?
Their father.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't think there's a mother in the picture.
I don't remember seeing one. Mm-mm. I may
there's
have
an aunt
pressed it.
Like that ends up raising them.
Yeah, the aunt raises them.
I mean, basically, there's a flashback later in the movie where you see him being operated on by these three forcibly by his father. And his father, this is so sad, his father takes the body of the deformed twin, puts it in a garbage bag, and puts it out in the street.
No, it puts it out on the other side of the woods, because I have in my notes, okay, you just had major freaking surgery. You wake up and get out with no drugs, anesthesia, and you get up, walk
just
through the woods until you find your brother. You know, that was...
And I forgot to mention that once they're separated, they have, like, this mental connection.
And a psychic bond. Yeah.
In their head. So,
Belial
tells Dwayne where to find him. Yes, correct.
Because Dwayne has to talk, mostly for us, so we know what the hell's going on.
They're saying.
Yeah.
And Belial talks to him mentally, because all he can say is...
Belial never speaks, although he does kill from the very first frame of the movie on.
I will have you know, and I've probably told you this a million times before, I saw this movie in a theater.
Oh, my God. Why would... what would do that?
I don't... my college roommate, Jeff Dudley, and I went... I don't know. We just picked a movie and went and saw it. It was not at the Kings and Four. I cannot remember what movie theater it was at. I just remember we had really bad calzones that day. I haven't eaten a calzone since.
You associate it.
I don't associate it with basket case. I associate it with just pounds of ricotta cheese, and it was just so gross and rich. But we went to a theater, we saw it, and it was very William Castle-esque. When you bought your ticket, they handed you a surgical mask with blood splattered on it.
Awesome.
Basket case.
I think I remember you showing that. Yep.
I wish I still had it. I don't know what happened to it. So I got a little souvenir, and we go in to watch it, and we laughed our asses off. We thought it was just the funniest thing we had ever seen in our life. And I've loved it ever since. I love it for different reasons now, though, some of what we've already mentioned. I do think there's general pathos in this story. As ridiculous as it may seem, you actually kind of feel sorry for Belial. I do, anyway.
Well, for both of them. I mean, Dwayne is basically not anything without him. Really, although he tends to want to be, but he can't be. They're so almost literally inseparable, haha. And of course, it does have a tragic ending.
Even though there were two sequels.
Obviously, I guess. You know, there were?
I can't remember them. But
really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a Basket Case 2 and 3. I want to say one where there may be even a female one.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I don't know.
Movie is plagued by horrible, horrible production values. They almost every scene in the movie is lit with single source lighting from the ground. I thought that was interesting, though, and I kind of started liking it. You know, because there's all these big shadows behind them. You know, most of the movie takes place at night, except for the one day scene with the receptionist sort of thing.
With the bad wig.
She was L'Oreal all over the place. I mean, it was like, I was going, you know, I wish that hair was real, because I like that, you know, that 80s, you know, faux big hair look sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it doesn't look real.
But
at
it
all.
Didn't work it's, with her. No.
No. And yet, he has mounds of real hair.
Yes.
Dwayne, I mean, his hair, he looks like a very young Lou Reed to me.
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see that. That yeah, definitely. I thought he, as an actor, tried really hard. He had some difficult challenges, of course, in that script. But I thought there were some standouts. I really liked the black girl. I thought she was really strong.
Casey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think her all of her scenes worked. Even her I'm going to scream hysterically for 5 literal minutes here kind of worked. As a character actor, the landlord guy kind of works.
At O'Donovan.
But none of the other casting is any good at all. The doctors are all terrible. All three of them.
Awful. And the woman, I think, wears the same red dress in every scene.
Yeah. I think she actually had it on in the operating room scene, too. You know?
Maybe.
Yeah.
With like a coat put over it.
So did they like shoot her all in one day or something or whatever?
That's
and by
what
the
I
way,
was wondering.
Her death is actually horrible. It is so terribly bad.
She's got like about 7 scalpels sticking out of her face.
That somehow got into her head from the drawer, but yet she has time to scream for about 48 seconds before she falls.
There's so many moments. This I was watching it in bed. Dennis was asleep. I had my headphones in, and I could not stop laughing. I was laughing so hard. Like when he comes to get the one doctor at his house, and the lights go out, and he just goes, starts screaming when the lights go out.
At the very beginning. Yeah. And yeah. I was also thinking, okay, so you get scared. You run back in your house. You hear something in the attic or in the room above you. Mm-hmm. Da, 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 so you lock all the windows. I was going, what does it make any sense at all? Why would you lock all the windows? It's in the house now.
Well, and you see the shadow of the hand reach up and snip the wires, and I'm like, he's too short. He couldn't reach.
Oh, no. He'd be like, He wouldn't be able to get up there to do it.
God.
But, you know, I actually kind of thought, was that Dwayne then? Did Dwayne cut the wire to let him do it?
You know, I actually was going to extend them that benefit of the doubt. I want it to make sense so bad.
Please let this make sense. But, I mean, you know, as a structurally, yeah, that's a great hook. I mean, there's a murder within the first, like, you know, 3 minutes of the movie. So it starts
the one
right
that,
into
is against the wall and the hand comes up and pulls him down or whatever.
Yeah, he gets the typical Belial hand in the mouth, pull down, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he comes up and he's all bloody and ripped open.
Right. Right.
And those effects weren't that bad.
No, they're not terribly bad. I mean, the worst, the audio for this movie is terrible. As a matter of fact, I wanted to do research and I didn't, so maybe you know or could find out. It looked to me like it was shot in 16, too. 16 millimeter and then bumped up, like they did Evil Dead. Because the audio sync was bad, the audio dubbing was bad, the music was really bad synth 80s music. It was terrible. And even in the happy stuff, it was you know, it was just really bad.
Well, and it looks a lot like that Evil Dead era where they may have filmed it a few years earlier and didn't release it until like 1982.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually have in my notes, you know, was this 16 shot up sort of thing?
I do remember reading something about it, but I didn't jot that down. I can't remember.
Yeah.
It may be in the notes, though, on IMDb.
And things don't make sense. I mean, basically, Belial is ahead some body, some tissue,
muscle.
And 2 hands.
Yeah. So,
You know,
and there he is sitting on the toilet behind me.
Which he can get into. He can fit in, yes.
Yeah, he was hiding in that toilet, but now it's quite clear that he's too big to fit.
No, he's kind of like Tombs. He must be able to shrink or whatever. But
Yeah.
But he can also knock down a door.
A metal door.
A metal door.
Yeah.
But then later on, you know, it takes 3 minutes to strangle somebody. I'm going, what? He would just and pinch their heads off. I mean, it's,
I did read one funny thing about the first one where he's supposed to, it's a murder where he's supposed to jump through a window. And they said they kept throwing him at the window and he would just bounce off.
Oh my God.
I would love to see those outtakes. Now that sounds like something Roy and I would do.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. They use puppetry, they use mm-hmm. makeup, and they use mm-hmm. stop animation to
which
create
cool.
this character, which is...
Also very Evil Dead.
An interesting try. Mm-hmm. You know, a definite key to me was that Evil Dead feel to it, kind of choppy in the editing. I've got that must be the most powerful Budweiser in the world because he sits down with the prostitute. They obviously have a six pack and then they're both just giggling and laughing and he tells his whole life story. I thought, what?
Yeah, I don't think he drinks much. I think that he just got trashed. You got me thinking about characters because there are lines from almost every character in this movie that I love. Casey, the one that he gets drunk with, is looking out for him. She doesn't want him to get... I don't like to see people get ripped off.
Right.
And we used to say, oh God, I can't remember the line. Come up and have a drink with me sometime. Catch you later. Bye.
Yeah, right. All
I mean,
in one line.
She doesn't even say it in the right rhythm.
Right.
And then you've got this crazy girl that he dates. I cannot remember her name. She's played by
Alice?
Oh, Sharon.
Sharon. The secretary.
Yes. And she thinks, since he comes in with a giant basket, she's the secretary of one of the doctors that he's going to get revenge on. She thinks he's there to fix the typewriter.
Right.
And that basket is his toolbox. Because
right.
she has a little mouse in the typewriter that goes ring, 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 ring.
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
I mean, she's the love interest, and she's cute.
She is.
You know, I think she is attractive. She's cute. She's not the best mm-hmm. actress, but she's not horrible. She's not as bad as a couple of the other, you know, tenants of the apartment or the hotel.
What's in the basket? Easter eggs?
Yeah, that's one of the lines in it. She does have a topless scene in it near the end, I don't remember. Was that in the VHS version? Because I did not remember that.
It was because his little deformed hand goes up and starts touching it. But what's weird is you don't... What happens is Belial gets jealous because Dwayne leaves him locked in the hotel room one day and goes off and has a date. Where he and Sharon go to the Statue of Liberty and do whatever. And, I wasn't really into this tourism stuff. I just wanted to spend time with you.
Right.
So bad.
Yes, so bad.
And Belial gets mad because mentally they're connected, and he starts trashing the hotel room. Meanwhile, everybody in the hotel thinks something's going on, you know, because of all the noise. And anyway, Belial is jealous of Sharon and ends up eventually... going after her.
Yeah, getting out of the hotel on his two little paws and getting all the way, however many blocks away Sharon lives, and getting into her house.
Well, he comes down a fire escape earlier and gives Dwayne the journal with the Rolodex with the address of the other doctor in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we know he can scale a fire escape.
Right.
You got to give them the benefit of the doubt.
There's a lot of benefit here. There's a lot of benefit happening.
It's the willing suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that really interestingly with a dream sequence where Dwayne is running around the streets of New York naked.
Totally naked. Full frontal.
And what is apparently transpiring is that Belial is having sex with Sharon. However, when we get there, she's dead. And if he is having sex with her, it's in like a puddle of blood in her crotch.
I didn't get that whole thing. I got the running was actually Belial running, you know, to her apartment kind of thing. That was him.
So it was Dwayne, his embodiment of it.
Yeah, he was,
so to speak.
He was free in New York sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, because I'm sorry. There's a long shot in the foreground is Sharon's nude body on the bed. Dwayne stumbles in the background, and this head and two hands puppet thing is in a puddle of blood, like you said, on her crotch, going
on her crotch. And it looks like he's having sex with
and
her.
And I'm going, is he having sex with her?
A wiener on this thing.
Right.
Maybe he's just trying to simulate it. I don't know.
Or maybe that's why they have Basket Case 2. I don't know. Of course, she can't give birth because he also killed her.
So he killed her somewhere in there. And I read, and I have this in my trivia, that during the shooting of that death scene, the crew became so offended they walked out of the production.
Really?
And that it happened again on the film Brain Damage. That they walked out on him again. So, at least Hennenlotter sticks to his guns and does not care who he offends.
I guess so.
And so that brings us, before we start jumping around, I guess we could sort of say what happens at the end. Dwayne and Belial get in a big fight where they are fighting with each other and go through the window. And Belial is clinging to the, what is the name of that? Bronson, Hotel Bronson sign.
Yeah.
And he has it, and he has Dwayne in his other hand, and he is what is keeping Dwayne from falling to his death.
Well, he has Dwayne by the throat. So
oh, that's right. It is by the
throat. It's not like I'm helping my brother. It's like I'm not through killing him yet.
Well, I think, I sensed that there was some remorse there, and he didn't want his brother to die. And then they both plummet to their death.
That's because I think you were psychically linked to Belial for a few seconds there. And you felt that. But no, I don't.
I run around my house naked going, whoa.
I have in my notes, too, other stuff like, why did Belial's eyes glow red in a couple of those scenes? Was he, I don't know why. Was he possessed? Was he evil?
I thought maybe that was when he's communicating.
Oh, could be.
The mental thing.
I guess, maybe.
To establish that.
Makes his eyes glow red. I don't know. I've got Hennenlotter loved that staircase. Because
they run up and down it a million times.
Shows that staircase a dozen times, probably.
I love when the girl runs, I think it's Sharon, runs halfway down it, turns around, screams, and then continues to run down it.
Yeah. Dwayne! And then she turns and does it. And there's another one, in one of my notes, I've got a line where she goes, Dwayne, if that's you, you better answer me. And I'm like, who else would it be? Why would it be anyone else other than Dwayne? So there were some script issues. There were some
You know what? There's a lot of issues with this movie, but it is one of those movies that if it was on a television, I would sit down and start watching it no matter when.
I mean, like I said at the beginning, you know, I would probably recommend it. I think people should see it, but it's definitely bizarre and weird.
It's bizarre. It's gory. It's offensive. It's terrible in places. And I go to it like candy.
Like devil's candy.
That basket is full of candy. I love this movie. We've mentioned Helen Lauder. Let me mention a few other things that we kind of went into a long, extensive synopsis. But I read that a lot of the credits at the end of the film are fake because there were so few people that worked on it. They didn't want to name them over and over, so they just made people up.
Yeah, they just made names up. I read that. Yeah, I was going, okay, yeah. And I kind of looked for it and went, yeah, it makes sense. Some of them are funny. Some of them are just weird.
Rex Reed, who is a critic I have always hated,
yes,
said that it was the sickest movie he had ever seen, and they immediately slapped that quote on the poster.
obviously, yes.
Which, you know, helped it. And then I mentioned also that Joe Bob Briggs is a huge, huge fan, and he has, quote, said it is a masterpiece of exploitation cinema.
I think it would depend on what offends you, if it's that offensive. I mean, to me, I think more people would be offended by Reanimator and what happens in it and that one big scene in Reanimator than they would be
sexual
in this.
Yeah.
This is more body deformity or, you know, the handicapped or whatever. If that is your sensitive point, then yes, probably this, you know, the guy is carrying around his deformed Siamese brother.
I think the offensive part must have just been the rape.
If it
the
was
implied rape or whatever of Sharon with the creature,
not the 9 scalpels to the face revenge murder of the doctor.
That's Friday the 13th bullshit.
You know, I've got notes that the separation scene is absolutely horrible. That is a terrible scene. It just doesn't work. It's the audio dubbing is terrible. The sound effects are awful. The blood effects are bad. Everything's just so bad. All of the murders, actually, the first murder is actually very good, but the second one,
building up to it is.
Yeah. The second one with the doctor that's kind of like Steve Buscemi's cousin.
He's got a little John Waters mustache.
Yeah. Didn't really.
In the flashbacks, he doesn't. Did you notice that?
Right.
He was working on that character.
Didn't really. His murder didn't really work and wasn't really scary or even that gory, really.
I can't remember how he dies.
That's the one where Bilal knocks the door down in order to get into his office.
Right, but I can't remember how he dies.
It's the same way. He mask, rip, pull, but then he actually does dive into his guts, you know, and tries to rip. Starts to rip because that's his whole gag is, I was separated, so I'm going to separate you. You know, mm-hmm. So speaking of separation, we have to talk about, all right, I finally got these three doctors, one of whom is a vet, to separate my sons, one of whom I don't even refer to because I really only have one son and this deformity that needs to go away.
Right.
The same night, I hear something and I go roaming through my huge basement. I mean, it's bigger than the Raven basement. It is huge. It's like a 4-story basement, monstrously long, everything else. But end up.
It reminded me of the Evil Dead as well. When Bruce is going through the basement that never ends.
And filmed in someone else's house, obviously, sort of thing. But,
yeah.
But, and I'm barefoot this entire time, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow finds a huge wood saw thing?
It's like a giant table saw that they have rigged on a little track with wheels.
And he stands in the perfect place to cut Dad in half.
Yeah. So they could have that shot of the legs falling opposite each other.
Right. Right. And I was going, what is going on? How did they orchestrate this?
I don't think it had anything to do with their skills. I think it had to do with the director saying, I want a shot with the two legs falling apart. How would that death occur?
Right. I totally agree.
You've got to go backwards.
You got from the effect to the cause. Yes.
Right. Exactly.
I understand. Yes. I just have it in my notes of how was this even remotely plausible.
It's sort of, not. Yes. Just like most of this movie is not.
Yes, is not. The same reason, just the take on stop animation. I think that's just because he could not get the puppet to do what he did. So, hey, I'll have my dudes do stop animation. But that probably took time and effort to do, even those
two scenes.
It did,
I'm sure. I love when you would see him move around on the floor, and then they would cut to live action, and you would just see, like, papers go flying everywhere.
Yeah. In the air. Yep.
Like he was throwing shit around, drawers, you know, all kinds of crap, man. He was a very destructive little creature.
And it takes them, well, yeah, it's like, doesn't the poster say he's mad as hell or something like that? But you know.
Maybe.
But.
The tenant in room 7 is very small, very twisted, and very mad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, because one of my, you know, I'm sorry, one of the shots that did crack me up, because I don't laugh a lot, but I did laugh in the. First of all, he's trashing the room. Every tenant in the hotel runs to the door and starts screaming, there's something in there. Does anybody have an animal? Is there an animal? What's going on? But finally takes the landlord an hour and a half to get up there or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the shot right before they all go in there is a long shot of the room. And you see Belial at the foot of the bed. And he's holding the bed and it's going, boom, 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 boom. He's
stopping it.
Bouncing just the arm of the bed, the foot of the bed. I'm going, what is going on?
He's mad, man.
Yeah.
His brother left him. He's out on New York.
Kissing girls and stuff. What's up with that?
He's out there with the Statue of Liberty having fun.
Yeah.
It's weird seeing a shot of the Twin Towers, isn't it?
That was actually a very chilling shot, yeah.
Yeah.
For me.
I thought so, too, because it's so pristine. I mean, the whole skyline.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But this is a very, like you said, this is a very New York movie. It's mm-hmm. a very based in New York. New York is a character in it, almost, down to the whole pan across the bar sort of thing as the girl talks to him, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's got atmosphere to it. It's just not well-directed atmosphere, I don't think.
I don't have anything to say on the cast because they didn't really do a whole lot, with the exception of Beverly Bonner, who played Casey, the African-American prostitute, I guess you would call her, that lives down the hall from him. And her part was apparently much smaller, but when Frank saw her performance, he loved it so much that he expanded it and cast her in every movie since. So she's in the other two movies, too.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. She was good.
I've got a little key with her as well that I will jump ahead to that I found fascinating. She died in November, so she's not with us anymore. Mm. But in 2015, 30 years after the film's release, she starred in a stage production called Casey, 30 years later, with a screening of this movie first. And then I guess she came out and did a one-woman show as this character.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
I find that fascinating. It probably only played one night, but it sounds interesting to me.
Very interesting. Very off-Broadway sort of thing. Yeah, that would be interesting.
So, I just thought that was really cool. That's all I have. I mean, obviously, there's no awards for this movie. There should be, but there are none.
Yes.
And so we can move on to keys if you don't have anything else.
Nope. I've got a few, of course. I'm sure all the obvious ones that you probably have as well. Okay. I mean, there's definitely Todd Browning's Freaks sort of thing to me, just because of the Belial shape, the way he is, that, you know, no torso kind of thing. He doesn't even have an upper torso, let alone a lower torso. So it's a very Todd Browning kind of freakish sort of thing to this.
Yeah, I had not thought of that, but you're right. There's definitely a Freaks key here.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I have a Frankenstein key. I mean, because I think the whole thing of the monster killing your love is very, you know, a Frankenstein motif sort of thing.
Not to mention the mad scientist pulling them apart. But yeah.
Not a creation. It's not Prometheus, you know, sort of thing. It's more the
disassembling.
Yeah, it's more...
It's the opposite of Frankenstein, almost.
Creating the monster that you... And also having a monster that no one understands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that... Sure. And he's actually got, like you said, there's the pathos of that. He didn't want to be separated. He doesn't want to leave his brother. He doesn't want his brother to be to get happy and go away from him. So there is that sort of, you know, the same way Frankenstein wanted a companion. He wanted the doctor to be with him, and he wanted the companion sort mm-hmm. of thing. What about you?
My biggest key would be Sisters, the Brian De Palma film.
Excellent key. Yes. Great. Yeah.
And I love that movie, and I think we should put that on our list as well.
We should.
Yeah. It was before Brian had big bucks after doing Dress to Kill. It was early 70s Brian De Palma.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you out there that don't know who Brian De Palma is, he was sort of an Alfred Hitchcock protege. If not, he was definitely mimicking Alfred Hitchcock in almost all of his films.
Yeah, he's an Alfred Hitchcock wannabe. He really wannabe, did craft a lot of his films in a very Hitchcock way, from mm-hmm. from direction to shot structure to everything. Yeah.
Yeah. He loves split screens. He did Carrie. A lot with split screens.
Yes, he loves the diopter camera.
Actually,
lens.
Carrie is probably what put him on the map more so than Dress to Kill.
Definitely.
Yeah, because it came first.
Stephen
so
King.
So anyway, Sisters is about Margot Kidder from Superman. She played Lois Lane. Is twin sisters in that movie. And that's just a big twin. I mean, big... wasn't she Siamese twins too? I think she
yes.
was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a big key to me.
Well, what's the Cronenberg one with the two brother doctors?
Oh, yeah. Dead Ringers. I forgot about that.
And
that is another one.
They're Siamese splits too, and one's good and bad, and they have the mm-hmm. issue. So, I mean, because that was another one of mine classic keys is this is Jekyll and Hyde, only two different people. You know, right. One is evil and mean and the killer, and the other one is the nice and I just want a life, and, you know, this girl has a pretty wig kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the only other key I really have is, and I think I've used it every time there's a little creepy monster, but it's alive. The one with the little freak baby.
You're right. And actually, I read that Hennenlotter got the idea for this film because of that movie.
Yeah, something little mm-hmm. skittering on the floor that could rip you to pieces is scary, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. But I also got it because of the hands, the way the hands are weird and deformed and twisted, right. You know, in the same way the babies were. And it's alive.
I have, one that's fairly irrelevant. On the wall of O'Donovan, the guy that's wanting to steal the money.
Uh-huh.
On his wall, there's a poster of the first Playboy twin playmates.
Oh, look at that.
I thought that was...
That's kind of some cool trivia.
Their yeah. names were Mary and Madeline Collinson, excuse me. But last, and I will save the best for last, William Shakespeare.
In what realm, pray tell, sir?
In the bedtime story, that you know, the aunt ends up raising the boys because they kill the father, and
uh-huh.
she accepts them for what they are. She doesn't judge them for being murderers or whatever.
Correct.
And she reads them The Tempest while
yes.
they're in bed.
But
and
that...
apparently the part she's reading is about
Caliban.
A deformed yeah. animalistic creature?
Well, yeah, but that's a stretch on that one. That's a very thin key. It's a very long
key. You know what? It's in
key.
There.
But yes, it is in
it's
there.
It's actually read in there.
Correct. And
so Hennenlotter had something going up there.
Well, that's his... okay, that's his quote thing, like the... sleep quote in Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, or the whole plot steal from Forbidden Planet. you know, it's the Tempest sort of thing. So interesting, yeah. The Tempest. It would be interesting to research how many times Tempest is used or referenced, you know, that story.
Well, the Nightmare on Elm Street one's Hamlet, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Because it's about dreams.
Yes.
And there's, I know there's some out there with Macbeth, too.
Oh, yeah. There are several. But you've got the poster up behind you. If you're listening to the podcast, you can't see it. But the poster is in total black and white, except for the title, which is in blood font red, sort of thing. And that's a really good example, I think, of that early 80s pseudo-exploitative poster, you know, with homages back to 60s and 70s. So that's kind of a key in and of itself, you know, that he took the color out of that picture and just really blasted his title, very, like you said, William Castle, but left it with this very memorable sort of exploitative look to the poster.
It looks like a lot of the videotapes we used to see in videotape stores.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have another key that just occurred to me is the creature Belial looks to me like William Hurt does in Altered States sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I could see that with that, the way they hunch him over, I mean, the way he's deformed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's like, yeah, it's like weird muscle deformity.
Right. So. Well, and I thought it was an interesting choice that they, you know, picked Belial for his name. You know, right. Because that's basically, he's a demon sort of thing.
Right. He's like the chief demon of hell or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, he was I think in the Jewish Bible or the Jewish mythology, he is the demon of lies and guilt. So, you know, very, very kind of works with that whole, the whole storyline for this.
Yeah, I want to say, I can't find it right now, and I'm not going to spend any time on it, but I want to say they spell it differently, though. Or maybe they spell
with an A.
Is it Belial?
Yep, Belial.
All right, then maybe it's something else I watched lately that misspelled it. I've been watching a lot of stuff lately.
Yes, you have.
Okay. Yeah, I'm watching The Boys on Amazon now, too. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
There's not a Belial in that, is there?
No Belial in that. No.
Well, I guess that sums up our key section of this podcast and probably the overall podcast as well. I think both of us would suggest this movie.
Right.
I would just love to see the expression of some of the people as they watch it for the first time. That's probably another reason why I've seen it so many times. It's because I like to see people's reactions to this movie.
True, true.
It's usually visceral.
usually
they run to the door, but they stop halfway through the room and turn around and scream and then continue running.
Right, right.
But yeah, I would recommend this as a classic of 80s horror cinema. Also, as Joe Bob says, exploitative cinema. It's a very New York piece. If you're any nostalgia there, going back to the streets of New York in the early 80s, highly, highly recommend that as well. I don't think the Hotel Brosnan exists. That sign was created. I'm not sure where they filmed it exactly, but somewhere in New York. And the shot where he's hanging from the sign was, I think, filmed inside. I don't think it was up high at all. It doesn't look like it anyway. Any other words?
I have no words. It would be like we've said. This is one of those that people, you know, I would still say, yeah, you need to see it. You know, probably not its other sequels, but you definitely should see this movie for early 80s horror.
Right. And laughs. I mean, you know, yet again, this movie could be considered a horror comedy as well, or at least I think so. And true. I haven't done a count yet, but we have a lot of those this season.
We do. We have had several that are both.
And unlike the raven, this is actually funny.
Yeah, it does have, yes.
All right, well, that's going to wrap us up. We'd like to thank everybody for listening to us today and joining us on our journey with Belial and Dwayne. If you are not listening to us on Patreon, we do have some bonus podcasts there.
Oh, yes.
One on the first season of Star Trek, which is currently all up. And we are doing the first season of The X-Files, which is currently in production. And if not up, will be up soon.
Mm-hmm.
If you are watching us and seeing all my lovely visuals behind me, you can subscribe to us on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we are still, you heard us earlier mentioning movies for the following season that we're going to do. If you want to suggest, we would love to hear from you. You can email us or you can reach out to us on our Facebook page.
Yes.
And I think that's about it. Anything else? Last words?
I have no last words.
All right. Well, we will see you next week in Sci-Fi Land, Mr. Horton.
Yes. See you later. Bye.
Bye.